Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment. You can listen to The Mike O'Mara Show at MikeO'MaraShow.com.
Well, what have we here?
It's a podcast.
Fine.
And what excitement we have today.
It's The Mike O'Mara Show with Mike O'Mara and Rob Spiewak. And now, here's Rob.
Hello, hello, hello. The Thursday edition of The Mike O'Mara Show. And it's your old buddy Rob. Mike is not here. And I think you're going to be okay with it for one day because sitting in with me is one of my favorites, good guy, Adam Ferreira. Hi, Adam. How's it going?
How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. It's so good to see you. Thank you for taking the time to see us and for muddling through our technical errors.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm on the roof with a kite and a key right now. We're going to make this happen.
You're doing the Ben Franklin thing. We do appreciate it. Adam, you are, I would call you a friend of the show. I love the fact that whenever you text me, you always start it with "Hi, pal."
Sure.
I don't have a lot of friends, so no. I like to count you at least, you know, I can call you off the bench if I have to.
Yeah, it's fine. And you got a lot of friends. Look, Josh is smiling.
Josh is smiling just because we're on the air now. Finally, yeah. That's why he's happy.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, things are working.
We have a good history, Adam and I. Adam, the first time, I don't even know if you remember this. First time you're on the show with us, we gave you a slice of fruitcake to sample, and really? It was my homemade fruitcake, and you actually gave it a thumbs up. You liked it.
I did.
And then you snuck in and saw us doing a live show at the Improv here in D.C.
Yeah,
and then, you know, you've always been there for us, so thank you for stepping in. As you know, Mike is out. He is having a procedure.
He's having a procedure, yes. He's getting a tummy tuck, from what I heard. Is that?
Yeah, you know, he's on the syringe stuff, I don't want to eat stuff. Yeah, he's on the Ozempic, but the tummy tuck, that's just, you know, finishing it up. No, he's having a colonoscopy.
Of course he is.
And he's been prepping. Well, you should know, just as a backstory, I'll thumbnail this because the listeners know, but you should know.
Okay.
He was scheduled for a colonoscopy 2 or 3 weeks ago, and he didn't do the cleanse right.
You drink this stuff and you sit on the toilet. What went wrong? He sat. He drank the toilet water. What did he do?
No. He ate pizza later than he should. And then the next morning, he said to offset it, he's just going to drink a lot of water. So he went to the doctors full of water, and they said, no, you can't have it because you're going to throw up the water and you're going to choke and you're going to die.
Yeah. But first of all, what kind of gremlins procedure is this? Don't eat after midnight. You know what?
Yeah. You turn into something.
You drink the stuff and everything comes out of you. Like when they cut open the shark and Jaws, the license plate comes out and. Shoes.
You had the little Kintner boy spilling out all over the dock.
I'm not going to watch you do some half-ass autopsy on a fish. So, those beaches will be open.
So 2 weeks is like a year. So when they went in, he went in for the second. They put him on a 2-day cleanse. So yesterday he was on nothing. No, the day before yesterday, he was on nothing but clear fluids, broth, Jello, stuff like that. But then he began to talk about how he had clear fluids and a protein bar and some chicken and some vegan bites.
You can't do that.
I was thinking yesterday after the show, I think the doctor's smart, put him on a 2-day cleanse knowing he'd screw up the first day.
Like telling your wife you have to leave at 10 when you have to leave at 10:30? Yeah. Could be.
So. And at 10:30, she's like, okay, I'm ready. I just have to pee. And that's another 15 minutes.
So hopefully Mike is doing okay with the colonoscopy today. Having a date with the, as he says, the rubber tube. So we wish him best.
Well, at least he's getting it done. I mean, there's the other one where you go in a box.
Oh, yeah.
Which, by the way, mailing your shit to another person, that's not a medical procedure. That's an act of revenge. I did that when I was a kid. And on Halloween, I put it on a doorstep and light it on fire. So who are we kidding?
But look at you. You're healthy to this day because of it.
I'm doing the best I can. At this point in my life, this is what I really, you know what point of my life I'm at right now?
What's that?
Is I'm at the age where I have to do something before I do something. You know what that means?
It's like, how do you mean?
read this. I got to get my glasses before I can. I got to get the glasses.
Oh, yeah.
You want some cheesecake? I got to take my pill before the dairy before I
Well, okay, we're roughly the same age. You're 57?
57, 58. I'm in that vicinity. I think I'm 58.
Okay. Okay. I'm 53. So we're experiencing the same. I had to get new glasses this very week. It's the first, these are them, and it's the first time I have the progressives. Right. And so this is, they said, you can't see at three different distances. And I said, good. And so I'm no longer having to do the readers, but I do have, up here is like computer length, right? Like maybe 18, 20 inches. And then this is the reading length. But the problem is I'm not used to going up and down yet. And if you turn left and right, bookcases are bending and floors are disappearing. Yeah. It takes some getting used to. And, you know, my balance isn't what it ought to be.
Yeah. I had them and I gave them back. I go, I don't know what this funhouse mirror you think I need is, but I can't. I need to see.
So are you rocking two pairs now? Are you doing readers
This is actually the two of them. So I have the reading thing is down here, and then this is like computer length. Then I just
So we're tied. It's good. We're both aging at the same rate.
Yeah, we're both crumbling.
So Adam, you are on tour right now. Just to throw this out there, folks, you can get all the details at adamferreira.com or at Adam Ferreira on all the socials. September 6th and 7th, you're going to be at Soul Joel's at Sunnybrook. That's Pottstown, Pennsylvania. September 14th, Bonkers Comedy Club. Love Bonkers at Island Resort and Casino. That's Harris, Michigan. And September 20th, 21st, and 22nd, Naples, Florida at Off the Hook. And then also you're headed to Arizona.
Arkansas.
I'm sorry. Is it bad that I confused them?
Not even close. You know,
you're right. You're right. Well, Josh lives in Florida, and he had to Google Naples, so.
Yeah, it's all right.
It's a big state.
And Mike's eating during a colonoscopy. So the show is just, I'm glad you tuned in now. God knows if it's coming back tomorrow.
I wish you could have heard the talk, because he said, I'm following it exactly except for some chicken. And then came in the protein bar. And then later he threw in the protein bites the vegan bites. And then he said, I said, you're hiding all of your truths. He said, I was going to reveal it. Like an episode of Murder, She Wrote.
What did the doctor say?
Tell the doctor. We'll find out when he comes back on Monday. So he's at the hospital right now. I texted him good luck. He said he got there early. I said, do what I always do. Go and check out the chapel. Make sure it's good.
Yeah, okay.
I always see the hospital chapel. I'm wondering, I don't know. Is that really what, I don't know. Do prayers in hospitals count if you go to like a location? I don't know.
Look, walk's as good as a hit. Do whatever you got to do to get on base. You know what I'm saying?
I understand. So, Adam, I love having you here. You're a pleasure. I got a couple of questions for you just about comedy. Yeah. I love talking to comics. Do you call yourself, and this is one thing, do you call yourself a comic or a comedian?
Depends on what job I'm at. If I'm at a comedy club, I'm a comic. If I'm on set, I'm an actor. Give me the check.
Okay, very good, very good. One thing I wanted to ask you is that you are, in the old days, they would say, this guy's a triple threat. He can sing, dance, and act. Well, you're not much of a singer. Do you dance?
No.
Okay. But you are a triple threat in that you act, you do stand-up, and also you're a reality host. So you are a dangerous fella out there when you're out getting the jobs. Of the three, do you have a favorite? And I think I know what it's going to be.
Okay. I'm interested to say, what do you think it is?
I think it's stand-up, but only when it's going well.
Well, that's like anything. You could love anything when it's going well.
I think it's acting, but only when it's huge paychecks.
That's good, too.
A caveat on your thing.
This is really cool. Is I've gotten to do all this stuff. So the nice thing about stand-up is, first of all, it's all you. You're the writer, director, performer. An immediate gratification. I say it when I stop talking. If they're laughing, now we're rolling in this whole kind of world together. Mm-hmm. The pain in the ass about stand up is to travel. Stand up, I'll do for free. You're paying me to travel to come and see you.
So right.
That's one of the things I enjoy. That, and I started there. What happened to me is I got my first. I came out to do the Tonight Show when I was a kid, and I auditioned for a sitcom, and I got it. So
what year did you do the Tonight Show, if I can ask? So that's when you were starting.
I know the sitcom was 93, 94. It was a Fox.
So you were, if not, you were very close to Carson. Was Carson on the Tonight Show? No. Leno was just starting.
Yeah. It was Jay. Yeah. And then I did it a couple times with Jay, a bunch of times with Jimmy. And then I did Letterman when Letterman was still on the air. So that was good. I
did want to ask about that, but let's stay focused on this. When you came out and you did your,
So I got this job on the sitcom and I loved it, but I realized I'm faking my way through it and they liked it, but I like this enough to study this craft because it's an entirely different discipline.
Now, did you do it? Was it a three camera shoot with an audience?
Yeah, multi-camera with an audience. So I had that to lean on, but then when I my next gig I got was a cop show with Dennis Leary, which was single camera, and single camera is like a movie. There's no audience. So after you say your line, there's nobody laughing.
Yeah. What was it called? Because a lot of the people from that went on to be in Rescue Me, right?
Cop it was called show? The Job. It was the Job. The Job was the cop show, and then Rescue Me was the fireman show after that. But as soon as you did the line and there was nobody laughing, I was like, that's it. Somebody needs to love me now.
Yeah, I did. Accidentally fell into one episode of the Pete Holmes sitcom Crashing. I was helping someone with an audition and they said, well, that guy can play a DJ. And I said, yeah, I can. It's really all I could do. So they actually gave me the job. It was. I was literally pretending to be a disc jockey for this other person to do their bit. And they asked me, I said, well, sure, that's fantastic. And that was another, film single camera shoot. Yeah. And it was weird. Not only not getting immediate response to what you thought was going to be like something that was a successful line, but also they would just in the middle of they say, okay, we're out of film. We got to stop here. And, it's very disconcerting. And I understand it's got to be a skill that you develop. But for me, the first time doing it, it was wild. And I can understand Mike and I love to watch Josh to see if we're totally flaming out or if he's laughing. He's not a very good laugher.
That's why I'm the tiny box.
But when you laugh, we're doing great. When you laugh, we've really hit it. But you want that immediate response. You want that immediate feedback.
Sure. Yeah. The hardest thing is I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, the hardest thing is also when you're doing drama to stay, because basically stand up is it's energy exchange and it's big. It's great. And I can be intimate with 400 people easier than one person.
Wear a condom for God's sake.
Oh yeah. I have no idea where they've been. It's just prudent.
it is an intimate experience. And clubs are laid out that way, right?
There's more courage for me anyway, because the acting take is the space between two people. That's where that energy exchange is. So that was a little more, especially when you do drama. Here's the thing. I had a cry. I think it was Criminal Minds I did. And it was, I played the father of an abducted kid. And the first scene up, 8 o'clock in the morning, FBI office. And it says, whatever my character's name was, breaks down crying. 8:30 in the morning. I'm the first shot up.
How'd you pull it?
I did it. But you look over, there's a teamster eating a sandwich going, we're going to go late today. I know we're going to go late today.
Well, that's enough to make me cry, having the teamster mad at me.
And you're a guest star, so you're only going to get two takes. So when you're only going to get two takes. That's all you're going to get. And you got to hit it first. And you're going to be up first because the regulars are like, I'm not up yet. Shoot him. That's what's going to happen.
So did you study acting at all, or have you just sort of
After I did the first sitcom, I immediately enrolled in a class because I went, I like this. I realize I want to be better at it. And there's more here that I don't know. So that's what I did it. And when I started doing stand-up, when I started doing comedy, I could do it. It was nice. It was a nice transition. When I had to go to drama, that was tough because what I was doing, what I learned in that crying scene is I can get to where I got to get to emotionally. Do that to be authentic in those imaginary circumstances. It's coming back. That's the problem.
I imagine.
I didn't realize that. Putting myself back together is like, because I think once I open up that box, I think Chaz Palminteri's in my nervous system. Like, now you can't leave. Okay. Now you're going to do all the stuff you shoved down here.
What do you say to the old trope that comedians can play drama, but dramatic actors can't play comedy? What have you seen in that experience?
So far, I haven't seen. I've seen evidence that that's true. I haven't seen any evidence that it's not.
Okay. Yeah.
Look, here's the thing about stand-up. For me, it's a calling. I think it's a call. You have to be called to do it because in order to do it right, you got to be consistent and you got to commit to it, and it's going to beat the shit out of you. So that's why it's a calling. Because more people go, hey, I didn't know this. Nope. You're going to keep going back because you have to. So that's
when did you know that that was your calling?
July 13th, 1988, on Wednesday night, East Side Comedy Club, Huntington, Long Island. I did it. And after I did it, Rob, I don't remember seeing the audience. I just remember it was dark, but I remember I belong here. I don't know how long I'm going to be able to stay.
Yeah.
I belong. It was the first
time. How did it go? I know that you did? Great. Do you remember what your big joke was at that time?
No. Here's what I did. I went to an open mic on a Wednesday night on Long Island. The mistake I made was telling my mother. My mother was the original Twitter. So I tell my mother, she told everybody in the neighborhood, and everybody showed up. The whole neighborhood, my family. So it was like, I had to be funny, or I wouldn't be able to leave the house anymore. We're here. All right, we're here.
Do you remember one joke that killed from that first set?
I remember I had written material, but when I walked up, my dopey cousin said something, and I just started talking to him and started making, and I ended up doing crowd work before I knew what I was doing, and the time was up, and I killed.
I love that. You have clips all over social media. You're easy to find, and it's so much fun to watch you in little bite-sized pieces. But I know some comedians...
Don't have me before a colonoscopy.
Some comedians, they don't release their, I guess, what you would call chunks, their prep pieces. They release their crowd work because it doesn't spoil when someone comes to see them.
Free content,
your crowd work is amazing. It's my favorite part of watching a comic work. And I think if a comedian can do crowd work, they're 90% of the way there because they're just taking what's real and around them and turning it into something. Your crowd work, do you have sort of like a vein that you follow, or is it totally improv when you I saw a clip of you were in some environment that was too hot, and there was a lady in the audience that had a literal fan, like an old-fashioned Southern Belle fan.
Sure.
And you did like 2 minutes on it, and it was brilliant, but you couldn't have known that there was going to be a lady with a fan in your audience. So, what is your process, if I can ask? I know it's nerdy, but I want to know.
The improv
handed
stuff.
Out fans in the lobby.
Yes, I hand out fans in the lobby. You look premenopausal. Take this and sit up front.
You're flushed.
Yeah. No, I started with improv because I was very fortunate when I started on Long Island. I got work early, and I didn't have the time. You know, I had this joke, I had that joke, but I didn't have time. So you had to do that. And when I started, it was a 3-person show: MC, feature act, and a headliner. And I would MC a lot because they would put the new guys there. And I realized that you had to warm the crowd up. So they're not going to love your material anyway. So you would work the crowd and then get that out of the way for the headliner and the other guys. So that's what I would do. So I did that. And then I would slip the jokes. And then when I started, you would do 10, 15 up front. You do 5 in the middle. You would do 5 in the middle.
It's quite a bit for throwing it to a beginner, you know.
Yeah. So that's what they would give us. So I developed it there because I had to do it to do my job. And what I realized the first time I was on stage, Rob, was I'm not thinking.
Wow.
I knew right away where I go, this is where I belong, and I'm not thinking. Bang. It's like golf. It's easy to explain it to you. Lifetime to master. You know?
It's 1988, and you're
improv, you don't think in the crowd work. You just do what it does. And I started an improv group, so it was like, what's the game? And you just play the game.
Makes perfect sense. So it's 1988, and you're in Huntington, New York. A lot of comics talk about the class they came up with. So you're dealing basically in the suburbs of New York City, right? You're a train ride away from the city. Who is in your class?
Bridge and tunnel track, as we like to say.
So who is in your class of comics coming up?
It was me, Kevin James, Gary Valentine, and Rock Rubin. Kevin and I used to share an apartment, and we also did improv a lot because none of us had the time to do a full college show.
Okay.
So I would do stand-up, he would do stand-up, and then we would play improv games for 20 minutes or a half hour because we knew how to do it.
And Valentine is his brother, right?
Is Gary's brother. Yeah, is Kevin's brother, and he played a cousin on the show. And Rock Rubin became the executive producer of King of Queens. So those are the guys I started with.
I'm obviously you're still working with Kevin because I know you show up in his projects. We have sort of a commonality there. When I produced the Don and Mike show 1,000 years ago, they pressured Leah Remini to get a walk on King of Queens. And so we flew out there, and it was perfect for me because I had exactly nothing to do but full access to all of Sony Studios, which is where the Three Stooges filmed, because I'm that much of a nerd. So it was really cool to watch a sitcom and have that going on. But I remember he was excessively cool, very nice guy. So, you know, so that's good. Dude. But he won't return my calls. Your calls, he returns.
What did you do, Rob? I don't want to get into it now.
Show me on the doll where Kevin touched you. That's the problem. When you are doing the New York stuff, and then you head to do clubs and stuff in L.A., and you still are bi-coastal. You're in L.A. today, right?
Yeah, I'm in my little studio, cleverly disguised as a garage.
I love it. I love it. And I love that you have Abbey Road, the actual Abbey Road steps behind you.
That's the exterior of Abbey Road. It says Abbey Road in that light, but that's what I'm a big cool. Beatles nerd.
When you, obviously, and I think we've all been there, you have the gumption, you have the fire that you say, okay, I'm big here. I know what I'm doing. I'm going to fly to Los Angeles. I'm going to kill them. When you get to Los Angeles, what is the difference between an LA audience, which is brand new to you, and a New York audience, which you've mastered, or is there a difference?
I found the LA audiences to honestly to be a little bit not easier, but the softer. You know, you could take a little time in between stuff. New York is like, what's going on? There's 26 million people on an 8 mile island. Make me laugh now. I got to get out. Someone's going to take my cab. So it was just like bang, 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 bang in New York, and you were used to. And every guy's at the cellar. You're following killers. Following killers, you know, so you got to get good quick. You know, out here, you're still following killers and you got to get good quick, but you can, like, my meter was such that they were trying to catch up, which is what I remembered.
Yeah. A relentless, you had a relentless momentum that they could,
It was like someone, I remember one of my earliest reviews was like a loose power line. I was just all over the place. They don't know it was ADD and I was cashing in on a mental affliction.
Well, just don't take enough meds that you lose that spark.
But I did find that the audiences would give me a little bit more license to paint a couple more colors in before the punchline, which was valuable, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think it was they were more expandable, if that makes any sense.
Without getting too behind the scenes or too serious about it, did that more relaxed pace of a Los Angeles set, did that help you in your acting? Because acting is not always about rushing. It's about taking the time and finding the moment.
Yeah, I couldn't pinpoint that to say yes. I will tell you what did help me with acting is it made me a better stand-up writer because I wasn't seeing a different point of view. Because one of the things I learned when I studied acting is what's your part of the whole rather than being stand-up, like I'm going to get the punchline. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of it is setting up for whatever the next line is and being, you know, it's not about you. It's about the scene. So once I got the felt sense of that, I'm like, oh, I could put this into writing, you know?
And I know acting is also, you're talking about how stand up is you, are the act. That is you. You're on a microphone. Acting is an ensemble thing.
Yeah.
How did, let's go back to your childhood.
Go ahead.
When you have to trust everyone in your scene implicitly, and you're raised, as I was, a devout Catholic. I mean, my grandmother was a picture of a pope in the dining room Catholic, you know, statuary Catholic. And so you always feel you're guilty of something. You feel the shame. Is it hard to sort of shake that when you're having to trust your acting partner?
Of course. Are you kidding? First of all, the precept that way was taught to me was he's dead, your fault. That's where it started.
I get it.
Yeah, Jesus died for you. Come on, Jesus.
Yeah, what did I do?
So that's where you're starting.
Yeah.
You have to baptize that baby. Why? Because it's dirty. What? It just got here.
I gave him a bath and everything. So that is, I know you come from, and that is some of the stuff in your act that kills me. Just your family back. It doesn't seem that you had an unhappy family. It seems that you had a very
happy, energetic, passionate. And by passionate, I mean batshit crazy. That's what I mean when I say compassion. But it, loving family did the best they could. The yelling, Rob, the yelling, the volume of the childhood.
How big was your family?
It depends on who made parole. But the yelling and they're loud people, Rob. And everything was an emergency. The atmosphere, my childhood, DEFCON 1.
Always?
The mental reaction, the emotional reaction, the internet is out. That's the same emotional reaction as the baby is trapped under the car.
Everything.
Everything. Was an emergency. But
I love that you use that because, you know, in some places, you know, volume is love. Passion is that passionate is love. And I'm glad that because you go ahead. I'm sorry.
The biggest thing I had to learn is volume is love and passion is yelling and worry is not responsibility. Here's the thing. The worrying about the money and everything is, I got to worry. Why? Because I'm the man of the house. You know, that's what I got from my dad. He was always worried. He was always like, but he was also this crime boss that could cut through anything.
Sure.
To tell you, right. And just like, Pop, I want to find myself. Good. Good for you. I can't afford it. You need someone else to sponsor your search. I wish you luck. Now, my father told me, this is what he told me, Rob. He's like, my job is to give you a better life than the one I had. So pay attention because I'm tired and I'm running out of money.
So I understand that you did study and I'll get back to your family in a second.
Yeah.
This was a delightful discovery for me that you studied at Marist College.
Yeah.
Now, Mike also, the absent Mike also studied at Marist and so did the great Bill O'Reilly. Did you room with either of them?
Never once.
Good. Good. Never we once. Always said that Mike rooms with Bill O'Reilly just to piss him off. So never you once. Did. You're in that DC. You're in that. I'm sorry. That New York area. Yeah. And your family is passionate. And I love hearing that because I had a huge family. My mom, one of eight, my dad, one of five. And, it goes and goes and goes and goes. So we weren't as loud, though, but I understand the passion. When you deal with other comics, comedians, do you see the sort of overplayed idea that they come from unhappy places? And they need to make people laugh, or did you not see that?
I don't know if it's overplayed or is it? It's just common. You got to write from what you know, and if that's what you know, and you can write about it, that's it. I mean, you're going to write about your experience. Whatever choice a comic makes to be a political comic, a social commentary comic. I'm a student of the human condition. You know, I'm trying to solve the pain in my life through art. And cash in on my roles. This is what it is. So, and the things I've learned. Look, art, for lack of a better word, not to be pretentious, but to create, it takes time. It takes time. And you have to be patient. I mean, the Pope didn't run into the Sistine Chapel and look up at Michelangelo and goes, I don't give a shit. There's ladders all over the place. I need the ceiling done by the weekend. I got people coming.
And the internet is out.
Yeah, and the internet is out. Dominus ominous, Michael. Finish the ceiling. You told me 3 weeks.
So you get to deal with and you interview a great, great selection of comedians on your podcast, the Adam Ferreira podcast, a.k.a. 30 Minutes You'll Never Get Back. And that's on all the providers. What are the, you say they write from what they know.
Yeah.
Is there some commonality that you sense? Because you get into, you've met, I'm sure, everybody in the comedy world, but you're just in passing. But when you sit down and you spend 35, 40 minutes with someone and you're talking, do you see any common strains through the comedians that are successful?
Authenticity. Whatever's authentic to that comic, if you're a good comic, that's what you're going to write. I just had, we were talking before. I don't know if we could hear it because we had a mic issue. But we were talking before. I had my friend, Jamie Kennedy, on the show. I'd done a pilot with Jamie. And one of my favorite bits he has when he was dating Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Yes, his she was very pretty.
Was his reality.
And so pretty.
And he was talking about a headline where it says, Jennifer Love Hewitt scrapes the bottom of the barrel. And Jamie's like, really? Really? I'm the bottom of the barrel. I think there's a couple under me. And it was just, God, is that funny.
That is. And something that only really he could write about or perform.
Yeah.
So authenticity. Who do you think working today, and I'll put you on the spot. I know you're not a name dropper, but just an opinion. Who do you think are some of the most authentic comics that are working today?
Roy Wood Jr., I think, is
okay.
I've spoken to Roy a couple of times. Just love the stuff he does. He makes me laugh. Ronnie Chang is really funny. You get the guys that and the women that just Erica Rhodes. I just had Erica Rhodes on. She's going to be on America's Got Talent, and she's fearless. She's adorably dark. You know, mm-hmm. her dad was in a wheelchair. He had MS, and she was just, you know, she would say they had an MS walk. I'm like, and that just comes to my mind because I just had them on the show. Yeah. So those are the people I see. But, you know, those anyone that's authentic and really talking about their life and can use the art form to connect to your life. That's the best stuff. That's the gestalt when you can do that.
I love that. That is so cool to hear that from you, and the authenticity being the crux of it. And just because, as you said, it is art and they have to craft it. And I think where better to go than something that is not only, you know, something you know well, but even something that hurts you in a certain way. The Kennedy joke is a hurtful thing. The MS walk is a hurtful thing. But if you can share it, it's not unlike Mike talks about this show, and I happen to agree. This show is great therapy. Whether it's, you know, Mike eating his protein bar or me, you know, just totally having the worst experience at an amusement park, we all have our levels. But when you come in and you have an hour to just bitch about it, you get it out there and it makes you feel better. Are you generally a happy person because you have that outlet?
I think I used to be.
What changed?
What changed? The mortgage.
Yeah, I understand.
I like to think I am. I'm better at it now in my life, Rob, where I'm looking at like, okay, this is what is. I don't have to. It's not my fault. It's here.
Right.
That was a lot. Go back to Catholic with the blame. And you talk about the eyeglasses. I actually did this, Rob. I was in a CVS before my wife told me to get grown up glasses and stop going to CVS. Because then you're at the mercy of whatever they got.
Right.
And, you know, I forget what I was doing, but someone took a picture. I'm wearing cat eye glasses because I needed to read something. And that's
with a big sticker that says 2X.
With a sticker that says 150. And this was what I did. Because I went from 125 to 150. I'm looking in the little turnstile thing.
Yeah,
I
put
the
150
on them. I go, that's better. And I just went up. I went up a quarter. And in my head, I went like this. Look at what you've done. You let your eyesight go to shit. Okay? What's next? You can let yourself be deaf? Like, I had some control.
Exactly.
Everything is my fault.
Yeah, but it's not your fault. And again, since we are in the same age region.
Tell the Catholic Church. They're the ones. It's your fault. That's all you're putting in the dish?
Did you put the water on your forehead?
Yeah. I'm so sorry. What? I don't know.
We're at this age now where, this is where we're at. I'm no longer going to host The Price is Right. 30 years ago, I wanted to host The Price is Right. It's not going to happen. But doing this, sitting here, is what we do, and this is great. And I think that might be one of the secrets to happiness, is embracing that. And I do find you to be a very happy guy, a cheerful guy.
Yeah, you try and do the best you can. Thank you. Inside, I'm crumbling. It's dark.
Do you want to talk it out? What's the problem inside?
Let's start with this. Somebody woke up, Josh. How do you do this? How do you sleep is my question to you. Do you sleep well?
I don't.
No, me neither. I don't.
Yeah. When you lay down, does your mind go into third gear? I mean, that's what happens to me.
I lay down, and then I actually have a bit in my act, the anxiety derby. All the thoughts race. And then I'll get 3 hours, and then I wake up, and that's when the haunted house is open for business. Just and now it's sleeping like I'm always sleeping like it's Sunday night. My homework's not done, and the school bus is honking outside, and I'm still in bed.
Yeah,
I don't set an alarm in the morning. I leap from the bed gasping for air. That's how I start the day.
It is. If I have a real important morning, I don't need to set an alarm, but if I have a real important morning, I just take my Lasix at night And then I know I'm up on the quarter hour. Then I never miss a thing. Never miss a thing. Do you have now here's weird. Here is something weird. When I do sleep, I'm not getting school nightmares anymore. Like going in and being unprepared for a test or God forbid going to school on naked day and it's the wrong day. Right. I still have radio nightmares that go back to like the board isn't working or the tapes aren't queuing or something like
that's
that.
Not a nightmare. That's how we started this show.
That's what I was going to say. God bless you for being so patient. But do you have any theme of bad dreams that when you talk about,
it's all over. It's all, the career's over. There's no money. That's it. We're under a bridge. It's all over. It's all over. It's doom. It's all over. It's doom.
So you've got a whole script. I've just got a scene. You've got a whole motion picture.
Oh, I have a trilogy. What are you kidding me? I'm a franchise movie is in my head. How is it all over?
Speaking of franchise,
You're never going to be able to pay for that. That's what I got.
So I was looking over your storied acting career, and you were in Definitely Maybe with Ryan Reynolds. I think you need to call him about the next Deadpool movie. I think you'd be a natural. I know it was some time ago.
Okay. First of all, that's a handsome man, Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
I don't care where your mail is delivered. That's a handsome man.
Yes, and no doubt.
That movie I did, right? So I'll tell you the premiere story. That movie was the first time I ever saw myself on the big screen. Because I actually went to the premiere. I never used,
right.
My wife was like, "It's at the Ziegfeld." Okay. And my wife looked beautiful. So
she is beautiful.
She's stunning. Oh, I'm batting over my head. Don't think. Yeah. I don't know it. So we're walking down the red carpet. Yeah, you do the interviews and everything. We go in. We sit in. The whole cast is there. It's a big event. Pretty cool.
Right.
Ryan Reynolds is a two-shot. Ryan Reynolds comes in this way, and I'm coming in this way. So it's like my mole looked like a ring ding. It was the first time. I made the entrance, and I'm sitting in the seat like, what is that manhole cover on my face?
Did you even ask the director? He said, this might work better with a stage right entrance.
No, I had no idea it was going to be like that. Wow. And I'm sinking in the chair. My wife is digging her nails into my thighs. Like, sit up straight. Kevin Klein is looking.
Kevin Klein is looking.
Yeah. Okay.
That's the worst.
So I was terrified. So I can't watch myself. Like, Rescue Me, I didn't watch a lot of that. My wife watched it and goes, you were good. If there's a problem, she'll say, no. This angle's
not.
So
you don't, if you don't watch your acting, do you listen back or watch your sets? For looking at how stuff works?
Like right now, because of the new delivery system with the internet where you have to cut different stuff, like I'll cut it because I'm a control freak. So I'll cut it and I'll write. I've learned to have an editor's eye.
Sure.
So I've learned to I give myself 2 minutes of, look at you. Look at you. Who the hell would want to look at you? So I give myself 15, 16 seconds of that. And then I go back in to make the song work.
Okay, cool.
So I can do that. But before that, I would listen. I would listen to my act on the road because I would listen all day while I was doing stuff. Like I would be happy when the joke worked. And then I would just listen. And for some reason, the higher mind is processing while you're in Costco.
Sure. Where do you work out your new stuff? Do you have a home club on either coast that you like?
Yeah. I have more time here in I have more time in New York. You get more stage time in New York. But here I got a bunch of Comedy Magic and Hermosa. I got the improv. What's today? Thursday? Saturday? I'm at the improv. So you'll slip a new one in here in the Ice House I got to go to.
I was going to ask that. Do you like sandwich a new bit between two tried and trues? So for God forbid you lose them, you can get them back. Yeah. Right?
They don't know what's new and what's not. But I know what helps me is when I have a new bit, like I'll open as strong as I can.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I have a new joke I want to, work on, I'll see where it's coming out of, because then that shapes how I get into it, and that could inform more about what the joke could be. And then when I come out of it, I got to go to here. So it's like, here's the new joke. Here's the idea of the new joke. What ideas are strong that can fit it? So it's like a little bit of a puzzle, and that's how the joke evolves, because when it's in different situations, it behaves different ways.
I listen to enough podcasts that I know the word chunk, and I love the notion of rearranging the chunks so that they work better. Is this is perhaps a naive question, but the stacking of the chunks, if something goes in the wrong place, is it powerful enough to kill it, or is it just enough to diminish it that if it's in the right place, it's going to kill? Does that make any sense?
Yeah, if it's in the wrong place, you don't know what it is yet, you know, because you don't know what it is yet. If it's in, you know, like if I had something in the wrong place, it depends on where I want it to go and what I have to get in. And a lot of it is the constraints you're doing. Like if I'm doing a special, I got time to stretch out.
Right.
If, you don't really do late night sets anymore. Like I do them. They're 4 minutes. Yeah. And it's basically once you figure out that formula, you get a laugh in the first 10 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
You put your best joke second to last, because when you say goodnight, the band kicks in. So why are you going to waste an applause break? So
right,
I would put
my
applause break second to last, and I'm building towards that applause break so that everything else is shaped to get me to there. So
it's
fascinating.
It's the architecture of it. It's like,
and I need the first 10 seconds because the producers are going to say, give me the first 10 seconds. Okay. And then everything else is going to lead to that for me anyway, right? Because I don't want to jump around with topics. And then you get a free tagline to say goodnight because the band kicks.
Now, I don't want to be too nerdy.
It sounds like a game of Tetris. Trying to block and drop everything in at the right spot.
What it is. Yeah.
Actually, I thought it sounded like setting up a lineup in a bowling team.
Yeah.
Because we talked to Mike, but Mike's a bowler and he's always in the second slot. And I said, well, that's where you put your worst bowler. So
it's right field, Mike.
Yeah. Enjoy. Try to stay awake.
Right field in Little League.
Not to be too nerdy, but you mentioned doing a late night set and you actually did a set on Letterman with Letterman. Yeah. And I, like so many people, miss Dave. I watched, I think, every episode after his bypass and many before. Mm-hmm. Can you just quickly walk through? Because I think that is, some people will say Kimmel, but I think Letterman was the last of the real late night shows that existed as late night shows before they were just fodder for TikTok and Instagram. It was actually doing a show. How did they spot you? What was the sort of vetting process and how did it go?
Well, it was a while ago. I'd done the Tonight Show, and back then you could only do one.
Oh, because it was, that's right, they were head-to-head, right.
Back then you had a pick, but I already done the Tonight Show, and they asked me to do Letterman, and I went, all right,
sure, why not? Right.
You can let me do both? I'll do both. So the first time, I'll tell you a story. I got bumped the first time.
Oh, how heartbreaking is that?
Well, here's the thing. I'm in the green room. Right? My mom and dad came in from Long Island. They came in through the tunnel. Like, this big event. Big event, Rob.
Just for my own edification, how would mom explain that you're going into the city that night?
Listen. Honey, it's your son. It's your son. We have to go into the city and see him do this, okay? It's at the Ed Sullivan. It's the tell. Well, he's gonna be here. He can do it Sunday. Right here in the living room. I'll listen. You're gonna go. You're gonna put a suit on. You're gonna look nice. And I'm not gonna look over. And I'm not gonna see you with a chicken ass face. We're a family. We're gonna enjoy this moment. God damn it.
Chicken ass face.
Yeah. So they don't travel. Americans don't travel. And culturally, we don't. Columbus had to go to Spain to get the boats. Okay.
So they come into the city.
Big event to come into the city. Big. Right. Like they're following Moses through the desert. They got a sacrifice to come in, right? So they got to come in. So they come in. Eddie Brill was my friend, and he was booking the comics at the time. So Eddie got my parents in early. And I'm on stage. I'm at the Ed Sullivan Theater, baby. I'm standing on the same stage the Beatles were on.
That's crazy.
And it's not lost on me. Shiny floor, I'm standing. I see my father, a big shock of white hair.
Yeah.
He was sitting right, and he gave me a thumbs up, and I came, and I waved, and I went, big event. Great. Lauren Bacall was on. God knows why.
Ooh, was she promoting, know, like coffins, or?
What she was promoting. I've seen the light.
Bacall. Yeah. Okay, good.
College football is upon us, and that's great. But if you're really invested in a game, it's awesome. That's where MyBookie comes in. When I have some action going on, trust me, that's the best way to watch a game. And when you use MyBookie, you're not just betting on football, you're investing in your team for the season. Last year, MyBookie had some of the best odds on the market for the Wolverines to win the championship. Michigan bettors who backed their squad saw a 10-time return on their wager. Ka-ching! These types of bets highlight why it's worth it to lay an investment before the season begins. Check out mybookie.ag and use our code Mike O'Mara for a great deal. A bonus of up to $1,000 on that first deposit. That's a great way to start off the college football season. Playing with house money, baby. Don't ever miss out on the action. Bet anything, anywhere, anytime, only with MyBookie. Remember, MyBookie.ag and promo code Mike O'Mara. No spaces, no apostrophe. MyBookie, light them up.
Big star.
So, big star, right? Big Hollywood royalty. Yeah. Rambling. My manager at the time is tapping his foot. He knows I don't. We get a bump. So at the end, so we ran out of time. So Letterman goes on stage saying goodnight. Adam Ferrara, he'll be back. He's in a cab. We can't find him, but we're going to have him back. You know, he made a joke, and that was it.
Sure.
So Eddie brings my mom and dad back to my dressing room.
Right.
And my mother's, she's got no clue. Will someone tell me what the hell just happened? Ma, we ran out of time. Well, we're here. Let's do this. I'm not coming back. We're here. Parents. Ma. You can't do it now. Lauren Bacall went long, and my father went like this. I never liked her. I never liked her in black and white. I never liked her in color, and I certainly don't like her live. Okay, God. I'm sitting in this friggin' it's cold as hell out there. I'm freezing my ass off. I got to listen to this old lady babble. I'm here to see my son.
I never liked her.
I never liked her.
So, but you did get to go back. How long before you got to go back on Letterman?
A couple of weeks. I don't know.
Okay, cool. Did you have any interaction with Dave, or was he, as often said, he's just a loop?
Shakes your hand. Don't look at him. And that was it.
Okay, very good. Well, that's what it's like.
Not only does Jake come to your room, he brings the bar with him. He would wheel up a bar and... Yeah. Come in and talk to you.
Yeah, you're not going to do Letterman, are you? We don't want you to do Letterman.
I want a drink. Just remember what you said about it.
You had to get rid of him. That was the problem. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break. I could listen to you talk forever. You're the best. Adam Ferrara, adamferrara.com. Check it out in the Adam Ferrara podcast. All his current dates are at adamferrara.com. When we come back, we'll do some news. Get Adam's take on it, which was sort of built for his edification. And we'll be right back after this. As a parent, I don't need to tell you guys how busy you are. And that's why you need Nurture Life. Nurture Life is the best, and they're a brand new client. Nurture Life is a meal delivery service focused on helping busy parents easily feed their babies and kids up to 10 months old to 10 years old. Now, they say 10 months to 10 years.
Eat your box.
They say 10 months to 10 years. My son is 21 and 6'5". He destroys the mac and cheese. He loves this stuff. They sent it to me and it didn't sit in the fridge. Of course, he eats multiple portions because he's not 10 months old, but he loves the food. It's ready to serve in just 1 minute, fully cooked. Nurture Life lets kids enjoy a healthy diet while still eating all of the favorites they like mac and cheese, the spaghetti and meatballs, and so much more. Robert, they have, for breakfast, they have overnight oats that you don't need to cook overnight. It's just in a jar. You can eat it cold. You can microwave it. And here's what's crazy. They sneak vegetables into the oatmeal. So they're getting their vitamins and minerals and stuff, and the kids don't know it. All they're tasting is the fruit. So what sets Nurture Life apart from the other meal delivery services? Nurture Life is amazing tasting and how healthy they are. And here's something that's great nowadays. It's allergy friendly. So if you have a nut allergy or anything like that, They will take care of you. It's about time the kids had a flexible meals subscription service, and babies and kids are eating better than ever when they head to NurtureLife.com and use the code TMOS for 55% off your first order. That's right, 55% off. And once again, that's NurtureLife.com for 55% off, and make sure you use our promo code TMOS so they know that we sent you. That's our happening news sounder, Adam.
Is that what that is?
Yeah, we stole that from WCBS from 1978.
Either that or the macaroni and cheese is here. Someone get the door.
So, another guy that grew up sort of near you, I think, if my geography is right, Billy Joel. Billy Joel's a Long Island guy, right?
Long Island guy, yes.
Ever met him?
Yes, I met him once.
Cool.
He had hair then.
But he didn't have the Darth Vader unmasked look.
No, he didn't have that. But you know, it was really cool. That was one of my first albums I got as a kid.
Oh, cool.
From the Columbia Record and Tape Club. Did you have the Columbia Record and Tape Club?
Not only did I have it, I still owe them money. Bet you do too.
Of course you do. I owe them the penny. The worst business model in the world. 10 albums for a penny. And you keep this is what we did. We would keep ordering albums. They come to your house. And then when they'd stop sending them to your house, you send them to the neighbor's house and you would grab them before the neighbor came home. And then you would take them to the Tri-County flea market and sell them.
Now, I know that you are a Beatles guy, which is something that we share. But are you a vinyl enthusiast to this day, or did you get out of that?
Not to this day, but when I was a kid, that was the most important thing for me. I remember the albums I got. Billy Joel, The Stranger, The Who, Who's Next, blew my head off. The Who blew my head up. Neil Young, Live Rust.
Yes.
You live on Sugar Mountain. Stephen Stills is a pain in the ass. You know.
Love it.
Yeah.
I have thousands of albums and tens of thousands of 45s. It's what I do. But I've been researching them, and the Columbia Records pressings of albums, if you research them by serial number, are worthless because they are so flimsy that they use actually less vinyl. So you take it, the cover looks the same, but you take it and you shake it. There's nothing to it. So stay away from them. Anyway.
It was like those acetates they would put in magazines when you open it up and you could.
Yeah.
You could
Mad Magazine, big mover of the paper record. So Billy Joel finally addressed a rumor that's been around for a while. Piano Man is not about a gay bar.
I never thought it was.
Apparently, this is something on the internet that the line is, Paul is a real estate novelist who never had time for a wife. Aha. And he's talking with Davey, who's still in the Navy. Aha. And probably will be for life. So they're saying that they're going to hook up because it's a Navy guy and a guy who never got married. Billy Joel says it's funny. He can see people reading into it, but it's not true. The Piano Man worked at a straight bar. So that's good.
No,
His
name was Billy Maxwell then, because he owed money to an old, he was trying to get out of an old contract.
Uh-huh.
And I think Walter Yetnikoff from CBS Records said, just write the music, I'll take care of it. So record guys back then could do that. Yeah, he ran from Long Island because they pressed Cold Spring Harbor at the wrong speed.
Oh my God!
Like a chipmunk, and that was his first album. So then he ran away to if I remember correctly, he came to L.A., got a job in a piano bar. He said, "I'll get a song out of this," and that was the song he got. He was hiding out and waiting it out of contact.
I saw him in concert once, and it was 87 or 88. He's had a string of bad luck, and this is when his manager took all his money and left him.
The brother-in-law took care of him. Like IOUs in the safe. Listen, we're sorry. I needed it.
So the concert was literally him and his band on a bare stage with white lights. That's it. There was no money put into the tour. One of the best concerts I ever went to. He's amazing. Yeah. So,
I met Rusty Javers, which was his guitar player in the early years, in the Turnstiles years. I met him he came to see me at a club in Long Island, and we're back in the back room. All right, I'll tell you a story. So we're back at Governor's, right? And I'm in the green room, and Joey Buttafuoco's there with Mary, the wife, Mary Jo, right? And Russell Jeb. They knew each other. And Jimmy,
sunnier days for them.
Yeah. And Jimmy, the owner of the club of Governor's, came into the green room and his head in the green room. He said, Buttafuoco's are here. Don't say nothing about nothing. And he walked out. They want to come back and meet you. Don't say nothing about nothing. Okay. So I come in and Mary Jo goes to kiss me and she's like, "You were wonderful." And the lips are over here. So I'm doing this. Right. And I look over. So she's very sweet. And Joey's very sweet. Yeah. Hello. How are you? Okay, fine. He's wearing the sweatpants, the whole thing. I look over and I'm like, I look over and I go, "That's Russell Jabbers." And no one's talking to him. And I was like, "Yeah." So there's people milling about. I went over. I said, "Are you Russell?" He goes, "Yeah." Shook his hand. I used to go see him when I was a kid because his band, Liberty DeVito, Doug Stegmeyer, that band was called the Long Island All-Stars. And they would play at this little club called Sparks. And I was a big music fan. So I would sneak in there. I wasn't even old enough, but I would sneak in there when I was a kid.
Great music scene. You're lucky to be a part of that. That's a great place to be at the right time. I love that. Very, very cool. All right. Are you a Chick-fil-A guy?
Am I a Chick-fil-A guy? Are you buying?
Yeah, not that you work there. I mean, but are you an enthusiast of their product? It's a chicken sandwich.
It's a chicken sandwich. What you know?
They put one in near my house, and it ruined my Costco parking lot. So I'm sort of anti Chick-fil-A because we had this great wide open parking lot. Then they put this thing in where every mother in Loudoun County, where I live, has to go through the line to get their son the chicken sandwich. And it is, folks, just a chicken sandwich. But Chick-fil-A is changing worlds as they develop a streaming service that will showcase family-friendly content. So now you can watch a Chick-fil-A TV, or what did you call it earlier, Josh?
Flick-fil-A.
Flick-fil-A.
Flick-fil-A. They're going to show it at the drive-thru while you're waiting online.
They should, because the line is long enough, but this is going to be a real television streaming service that does family-friendly content. And they also are going to look into scripted projects and animation. There's no word when it might happen, but it's happening. And what was the producer you found, Josh?
Oh, Brad Gibson from Top Gear is one of the heads of spearheading this.
I got a text about this morning.
Really?
I got a text about that this morning.
So you share a producer with him. You will never have to pay for a chicken sandwich again.
I did not get it from Brad, but I got a text like, "Okay, Chick-fil-A's doing TV." I said, "I'm trying to figure out a mic issue for the Mike O'Mara show." All right, I have no
get out of here. Yeah. Well, you know what we
Is have to reshoot some Top Gear episodes going through drive-thrus.
Sure.
For them to just plug into the episodes.
I know people are going to kill me if I don't ask you about Top Gear. I want to do that in our next segment because it's fascinating. But let's finish up the news here because I do want your take on two more stories. That's not what I wanted to hit. This is such a great Florida story because it starts in Florida and the destination is Las Vegas. A man was kicked off a plane and arrested because he refused to leave the plane because he was bleeding after his hair transplant. And refused to cover up the bandage with the bandage. Yep. I saw this guy. He had just gotten a hair transplant where they had moved the hair from the back to the front.
Crop rotation.
Yeah, and he was bleeding. And they said, "You got to leave." He said, "No, I'm going to Vegas." And they actually charged him with trespassing and being an unruly passenger because he wouldn't leave. He said, "I ain't got no bandages. Just let's go to Vegas." I am on the side of the airlines here. I don't want to see a bleeding head on a plane.
Yeah. Okay. Hold on. Right, well, let me put this. He's sitting on the.
Have you seen the?
Good.
Yeah. He's seen the picture of this guy.
Can you put it up?
I am going to pull it up because I could not tell if this was AI or what this was.
No, that's real.
Wow.
So let's say you're sitting behind this guy. I don't know, but also here's the most amazing part. He was with his girlfriend.
Okay. Here's the question I have. That's not a head. He's got no hair. There's nothing.
I know.
Not even filling anything in.
Can we have it up one more time, Josh?
Yeah, it's just bandages on the side.
Yeah, he's. If you look at the bandages,
why not throw a beanie on?
Because it'll stick.
I guess so.
But the bandages on the side give him sort of a Captain Steubing look, and the top kind of looks like Jerry Mahoney, the old.
He looks like Tony Sirico on the side.
You know, he's not a bad looking guy, but the blood.
He looks like he was scalped.
Yeah, he was. Well, we wish him all the best. And finally, have you ever experienced a movie in a theater that has smell-o-vision?
No.
No, I have.
You sat next to someone who farted in a movie.
That's the different thing, Adam. If you go on the ride at Disney World called Soarin', they actually pipe in scents while you're doing this immersive 4D movie. Like if you, there's pine scent when you're flying over a forest, orange scent.
But that's
scent
a ride.
Yeah, but it is like a movie screen. So I kind of make it count. But it never really succeeded. I know John Waters did a scratch and sniff card that he could, you know, distribute as you went into the theater. That was not a success. However, there is a new company called Movie Scent that releases real-time scents based on events, environments within movies, TV shows, and sporting events that you actually install at your house. So you have Smell-O-Vision at your house. Some of their current scents include ocean, fresh-cut grass, restaurant, don't know about that, forest, and storm. And then if you want to clear it, there's a fresh air scent as well. They're, right now, they will start to ship if you buy it at $179.99. And in the weeks ahead, they have new scents coming out like fire, jungle, zombie, and 40 other scents. My recommendation is if you buy it, do not watch The Golden Girls or Love Island. I would just stay away from them.
Yeah, and don't watch Monday Night Football and, I smell jockstrap.
Yeah, that's probably one of the 40. But that one of their scents is sports. So I guess that would have to be a jockstrap.
What does it smell like?
It smells so nice. I smell Frank Gifford. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'll talk to Adam, about Top Gear right after this. And Josh can play too. Oh, I have to sound the alarm. This is exciting. Everybody, listen to this.
Hey, you guys!
We got a new thing coming up on the show, Adam, and I think you will like this. Whenever you hear that sound, you know we're talking about the TMOS Shout Society. It's a brand new TMOS feature that lets your message take center stage. So whether it's a birthday, an anniversary, or any exciting milestone, this is your chance to broadcast your message to the entire Omeraverse. Give a shout out to your favorite person, request a special plug for your podcast. Rob can say something, Josh can say something, and also you can have your favorite impressionist. That's Mike O'Mara. Although my favorite impressionist might be Adam Ferrer doing Neil Young now. I think it's a close second. I loved it. But anyway, you can get us to say anything you want and to spread your message. And right now, all shouts are 25% off. Get all the Shout Society information at MikeOMaraShow.com. Talk to us and let's have some fun. It debuts next week. We actually have one in, so we're looking forward to it. And Use us like a toilet. Now, Adam, I mentioned that you are an actor. You did stand-up reality. I guess Top Gear USA is considered a reality show because you're dealing with real things. And people love it. Even non-car people are just, it's so fascinating and at times ridiculous, the stuff you did.
Many times.
Yeah. So... I will just start with a very wide open question. What's the favorite thing you ever got to do? And I won't say be made to do. I'll say your favorite thing you got to do on Top Gear.
It can't come down to one. I can give you a list of a few off the top of my head. First of all, I got to be with those guys. I got to go on journeys with Rutt and Tanner. And
you
got
love them. They're good guys. They're as good as they appear on TV, I suppose.
Yeah. It's the one thing that feedback we got from the show is you guys seem like you genuinely love each other. And we do. But we do. Yeah. But I got to do 188 in a Ferrari F12 Berlinetta. Gorgeous. That's the fastest I've ever gone.
Now, that was through the streets of New York.
No, that was on a causeway in Utah. Here's the thing. So they put me in an F12, right? And around 140 miles an hour, a car starts getting light. You can feel it coming up.
Yeah.
Talking to the camera, and at around 188, my ass sensed a speed wobble. For those of you who don't know what a speed wobble is, like, hey, what's that? Dead. That's what a speed wobble.
Okay.
So I'm doing 188. My ass sensed a speed wobble. I lift off the gas, and it's a 211 mile an hour car, top end speed on that. Particular Berlinetta. So as soon as I took my foot off the gas at 188, the car just said,
take him away, he bores me.
So I got to do that. I mean, I got to drive cars, Rob, that cost more than the house I grew up in. They flew me to Germany. They put me on the Autobahn. They put me in a left lane in the brand new Lamborghini Hurricane, and they said, go.
Wow. And it was really that open-ended? They'd install cameras in the car. They'd have cameras on the car, and they just want you to go as fast as you can. Oh,
screaming.
My God.
So I did that. I did. I got to do.
How did they find you to host that?
I had done another Rescue Me. I'll tell you a story. Rescue Me. We're on the tour bus. We're doing a Rescue Me comedy tour. It's me, Dennis Leary, Lenny Clark, Kenny Rogerson, and we're all on the show. And Dennis said, pulled me and Lenny aside, and because he said, "Listen, what do you think about making this the last season of Rescue Me?" And Lenny and I looked at each other and said, "No."
You don't accept that.
I go, "No, I don't accept. We don't have Ice Age money. Think of it, you skinny Irish son of a bitch." So he said, "Okay, we'll do like, I think we did like 18 episodes. We cut it in half, and those will be the last two seasons." So you know,
okay,
Joe Biz, I need a job. I need a job. So I know the end is coming. I need a job. I was going to go back on a ride. I was writing a new special, and my manager goes, I told him, he's like, "What do you want to do?" I said, "I want to do something with cars. I always want to do something with cars." So they get me a meeting at the History Channel, and I had done a pilot for History called The United States of Cars, where we would tell the history through different cars at the time. So we shot the pilot. It didn't go.
Okay.
But they liked me. So then I got a call. My manager goes, "They want to meet, History Channel wants to meet you." I go, "To what? Talk about Hitler? We won. what are we doing?"
Was the problem that the first episode was just called "He Built Good Roads"?
Yeah. He had a six-wheel Mercedes, drove it right into France. So I meet the producers of, I meet the people at History, and they said, "Are you familiar with the show Top Gear?" I said, "Yeah, love it." Because I would watch this. It wasn't this big thing yet. It was like,
right.
I would watch it on the internet. You would see clips on the internet.
Sure.
And it was like, you know, and you'd see, where else am I going to see a Koenigsegg? I don't know. Okay, there it is. That's a Koenigsegg.
Yeah, there it is. Right.
No clue, you know? So I would see all this stuff, and I was really enjoying the clips. So they said, "We have the rights to do the American version of Top Gear." I said, "Don't screw it up. It's a great show. Don't screw it up." They go, "Well, we'd like you to be in it." I'm like, "I don't want to screw it up. You know, I'm not going to, you know, don't blame me." He's like, I said,
"So honestly, I know you joke around sometimes, but you had enough reverence for the show that you were nervous about being a part of it because you didn't want to be there."
Yes. Anytime you do something that is it's like when Comic-Con goes corporate, you know, it's like,
yes,
it's
exactly
this culty thing that was our thing, you know, and I know when Italian says it's our thing, it means a different thing, but I'm not saying it.
Okay. What I'm saying,
this is my thing, and then you could see it. Like, it's like my podcast. When podcasts first came out, I found my favorite podcast. There were no commercials in it. I go, "This is going to be, you know, it's no longer my thing." Now everybody knows about it.
You can get our podcast commercial free.
That's
if you choose.
And you can get mac and cheese delivered to the house,
right to your door. It's ready in 1 minute.
Be like Rob and feed giant children. Do that.
By the way, I should say Nurtrilife did not make him 6'5". These were independent of each other.
Okay.
Okay.
Point of clarification. So I said, "I'm not interested in doing a knockoff. I don't want to read for the part of Jeremy. I don't want to do."
Okay.
Goes, "No, we have the rights. We want it. It's being done by the same producers that produce Top Gear." So I knew when they told me that, I knew, like, well, they're not going to do anything that diminishes the brand. And I'm in the family that's doing it. So how do I not at least meet the people that put on a show that I love? I said, "Okay, fine."
Sure.
So I'll go meet the people. And this wasn't like any other. This wasn't like any other audition I've ever had. You didn't go to a studio. You didn't go to a producer's office. You didn't go in. It was like, go to the church parking lot, look for the Mitsubishi Evo, and no cops. It was like a ransom drop. So I drove
in.
Over.
You're in.
I drove over to Valley, to the Valley in L.A. in Burbank. There was an Evo, a bunch of English guys, and cameras set up in a church parking lot. Walked in, met the other two guys, and we just started messing around in the car.
That's so cool. Someone in the chat wants us to ask you about the time you bent the frame of a Cadillac like a banana.
Yeah. Okay. So that was the first. Road trip episode we did. The first episode we did, I did 180 in a Lamborghini, in a Super Leggera. We had Lamborghinis.
You are so lucky not to have the gig. You're lucky to be alive.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They almost killed us twice.
God.
Each of us. They almost killed us. In fact, I had Richard Hammond on my podcast because he almost died twice and I almost died twice. And I could actually talk to him about the experience where time just stopped.
God, that's
wild.
He
had the same experience where I was. Wow. Time just kind of stopped. So anyway, yeah, we're tracing the roots of moonshine. Because roots of NASCAR, which started from the guys running moonshine.
Running shine, yeah.
That's where it was. So we all had to pick cars. So I picked the 76 Coupe DeVille because, listen to me, what else should I be doing?
You're so right.
You know, you're not going to hear this voice and go, no, a Subaru Impreza. Give me the Subaru. Bring me to Forest. I want to give it to my sister. She needs people to take the girls to the softball.
I think you chose well, Adam.
Yeah, so I choose this big 76 caddy, right?
Okay.
Huge. And we're going, we have to go through this, moonshiners would outrun the cops by going through the woods. So we had to go through the woods. And we found this little motocross track. So I was looking at the motocross track. And what happened was, this was our second episode, so we didn't know each other. So they put us in a Suburban. They're driving us to the track. And Tanner's a race car driver. He's like, all right, I got to hit this. He's doing all his calculations. And I'm like, where are we going? I thought we were going somewhere. I want you to see the turns. I'll see you when I get there. You know, what do I, you know? Okay. Because I didn't know anything.
Right.
Basically, my strategy was this. He goes, what's your strategy? Because you had to talk into the camera. I go, I'm going to stand on the gas and hold on. And that's what I did.
Great words from a man who's done two episodes.
My second episode. I'm driving this battleship. And then I'm on Spalding tires. There's no ground clearance. Just standing on this thing, right? And there's no safety harness. You know what? The race car driver comes over, Tanner. The guy I met 2 weeks ago comes over, takes the headrest up, pulls my shoulder harness seatbelt, puts it under the headrest, gives me an $8 motocross helmet, and says, "You'll be fine. Go ahead, go."
Wow,
that was the whole thing.
Wow.
So I knew when I came around the turn, I was getting air right away. I'm like, "Oh, that might have been a little too fast," but I'm committed now. I can't lift. Mm-hmm. I came around the corner and there was water. I had to go through the water, and I knew I had to stand on it because this is a 5,000-pound car.
Yeah.
If I get stuck in that water, I'm not getting out. So I just stood on it to get through the water. I came around. I almost rolled it. I almost rolled it off a hill that I had to go over. So I came back down and I came around the corner and I had to go over this hill and I just stood on it again. And I went up this little ramp, Rob, and I kept going up.
And you said, that's not supposed to happen.
And it got real quiet.
Right.
For a long time.
Oh, no.
And we were shooting in the woods in North Carolina, and everything stops. I'm not hearing anything. All I hear is wind rushing, and way off in the distance, I hear, boom. This thing hits the banana. It bananaed the whole front clip. It came down.
Oh, my God.
I got it level, and I've seen the footage after. I got it level, but then, you know, the motor
starts to sink. Yeah.
So the motor starts to sink. So it's coming down like this. And I didn't know this. Tanner actually told me this. And he told me this when he was jumping, because Tanner jumped the Hot Wheels truck 300 feet at the Indianapolis 500 years ago.
Okay.
And he was telling me about the math when you're in the air. If you're in the air and you tap the brakes, it brings the nose down because it stops. Some kind of wacky math. So I don't know what the hell happened. So anyway, the front end clip. Boom. And it just bananaed the whole front. I couldn't get out. I couldn't open the door because it pinched. The door jam pinched. The door pinched into the jam because of the impact.
So you didn't win.
Yeah. No, I won. Sorry.
Oh, you did win. Okay, good.
I won. But you couldn't
get out of the car. But
all the moonshine bottles were broken, so.
Well, no. You know what? Next time, episode 3, you'll do better. We're going to take a break and come back with the great Adam Ferreira. This is so, so cool. I have a question for you about, again, and again, I hope I'm not getting too nerdy about the world of comedy. I just find it so fascinating. And it's a pleasure to have you here. Check out AdamFerreira.com and the Adam Ferreira podcast on all the podcast outlets and all the socials. At Adam Ferreira. So do that, folks. Now, my laundry detergent, I wish you could smell me. I smell so good right now. It used to come in a big, stupid jug, and it smelled kind of meh. And I switched to Laundry Sauce. Now, Laundry Sauce has partnered with one of the top fragrance houses in the world, and it smells amazing. Mine is sandalwood. My wife loves the smell of it. My son is going to steal it when he goes back to college, so I've got to watch him. They've taken away all the unnecessary ingredients, and it just smells awesome and clean, and your clothes come out looking brand new. Laundry Sauce makes scent boosters, dryer sheets, which are amazing, dryer balls, fabric softeners, and even candles. Plus, if you're not happy, send back your Laundry Sauce for a full refund. No questions asked. When we are in Las Vegas, please, folks, come smell me. Elevate your laundry with Laundry Sauce. Now is the time to check it out. Head to laundrysauce.com/TMOS and use promo code TMOS at checkout for 15% off. That's the best offer you'll find, but you must use our code TMOS for 15% off your order. One last time, that's laundrysauce.com/TMOS, promo code for 15% off. Now, I did mention that. I'm curious. I look at your gigs and the stuff you do. You do hit some smaller markets around the town, but you played the big ones as well. Have you ever played Vegas? We're going to Vegas on November 9th to do a live show.
There used to be an improv at Harrah's. I used to do that a lot. And then I think I did a couple of the, what else did I do? Oh, there's the Cellar at Rio. I would do the Cellar.
How are the Vegas audiences? Are they rewarding or are they just sort of there?
They're a touristy audience because they're all tourists, you know?
Yeah, of course.
And you have common ground about gambling and walking around in Vegas. So you have common ground to talk to other people about. So, it's fun. It's a different set to do because of those parameters, but it's fun to play in that context too.
It's a fun town. I'll go on the record as saying that Las Vegas is a fun town. You can prove me wrong. But
I haven't heard that before.
We're going out there November 9th, and we're doing we're doing our show live from the pool deck of the Downtown Grand, just off Fremont Street. So it's going to be a lot of fun. If you're in the neighborhood, do stop by. Question about social media, and I love talking about the route you took from getting started on Long Island, moving into the city, and then going to Los Angeles. That's how people did it. And I guess you were in that sort of class that you were eyeing a sitcom. You were on a sitcom. It wasn't for you, but that was how you did it. You played small, you got bigger, you got good, and then you went to Los Angeles. Now, with social media, your TikToks, your Instagrams and stuff, people can become extraordinarily famous and successful in their basement just by releasing stuff over and over again.
Yeah, like Ted Kaczynski.
Well, great guy. I didn't like his closer, but a good guy. When you see people that, what's his name? Adam Reif, is that his name? The comic that got big? Yeah, Matt Reif. He got huge on the socials, and then he was selling out the equivalent of huge theaters because of his social backup. Do you think at all that weakens the product by not the way I'll can draw the parallel of this is so many rock musicians hated American Idol because it removed the struggle to get to be a famous singer or rock and roll.
Yeah. But you also don't have. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, you.
Yeah, it removes the struggle, but the struggle also gives you the tools to endure once you're there. Getting there is hard enough. Staying there is even freaking harder.
Yeah, I would say, I love watching you on social media. You'll just drop something in where you say, here, I'm coming to see you. And it's very friendly and very folksy. And you'll do your clips. Have you found social media to help the way you promote yourself? Or is it just like, I got to do this because everybody's doing
it? No, you have to do it because that's what the world is. The world is on your phone. People aren't going to see a comment. They're going to see the people on their phone. You know, it's a different, you know, I saw him on Letterman. I saw him on this TV show. It's a constant presence on their phone. You know, you check back in, you have to keep providing content so people will come back to you because if you don't do it, the next guy's going to do it. So the quality it goes back to art taking time, you know, to do it right. And that was a big struggle for me because I'm like, it's not ready yet. And my managers and agent go, it's Doritos. We'll make more.
Josh, you were saying.
I don't know. I don't know if you noticed, Rob. And as Adam talks about, you got to reach out to the people because you're the guy that makes them laugh on your phone.
Right.
I'm not sure if you noticed this, but on Tuesdays, Adam goes onto Facebook Live for a Talk to Me Tuesday.
Does that work?
Does it work?
We tried something like that wasn't exactly a sizzling success.
I've been doing it for years, and there's so many people that come and go back and forth. You know, it's just it's you know, it's every Tuesday I'll just sit down, because I started doing it because I would live tweet during Top Gear, because that's when we would air. So I created this little family, and then when, you know, sometimes Rutt and Tanner would come on with me, and it just kind of stuck. So I just still do it because those people are important to me. I do it every week, and people come back, and you hear about their lives. It's like your radio show. This Mike O'Mara is part of, you know, some people's lives. My podcast ends. I think I told you this last time I was here. I end with the same thing. I ripped it off from you guys. The little clip at the end.
Cool. Well, I appreciate that. That's very neat.
Because I would listen to the show. I lifted it from you guys, and then I put a little voice in it, the Siri voice, because the Siri voice introduces me and then makes a comment on the little clip at the end. But that's directly from you guys, because I would listen to you all the time. I still do.
That's awesome, Adam. That flatters me no end. I want to hit it once again. The Adam Ferreira podcast, that's on all the carriers. Also on the socials, at Adam Ferreira and adamferreira.com. He's coming to Pottstown, Pennsylvania, Harris, Michigan, Naples, Florida, and Arkansas. Was it Fayetteville, Arkansas?
Fayetteville, Arkansas. I believe I'm there. My apologies, because it's a performing arts center, and it came in yesterday, and I just said,
Check the website. It'll be there.
I'm going to put it up on my website, but I believe it's going to be the 12th of September, and I'll pull
awesome. Check it out. He's a very, very funny man, and I'm not saying goodbye. I'm just telling you that the fact that you came and spent this time with us, we got another segment, but if I forget to say it at the end, such a classy guy and a fun guy, and I love having you on the show. So let's take a break.
Of course, is the plural of fungus.
So let's take a break. We come back. I got some videos, some beautiful video to show you. So we'll take that and come back. And this is the Mike O'Mara Show. We're back with a new bonus show tomorrow with Mike and his ass. And we will be back after this. Yeah, that's our new third chair. Unleash your best self with DermGlowSkin.com. It's never been easier. You just fill out a quick questionnaire, have a call with your medical provider, and get your prescription delivered right to your door. One injection a week, and you are on your way to losing 21 to 26% of your weight while improving your blood sugar, cholesterol, blood pressure, semaglutides, and tirzepatide for weight loss. You haven't seen Mike in a while. If you haven't, he is a shell of his former self. He looks amazing. Plus, they have NAD+, B12, Somalian, and PT141 for that extra boost. So get ready to shine in Las Vegas. Feel great. Look amazing. Be like Mike and start your transformation today at DermGlowSkin.com. That's DermGlowSkin.com. I'm Rob Spiewak, and I approve this message.
Hey, I like that. Some beautiful video.
Jerry time.
I love when people go wrong and then sort of, I won't say inadequate newscasters, but I'll say middle market newscasters get to carry the story.
Okay.
This is you travel a lot. You mentioned this. And when you get to your locations, I'm sure you check into a beautiful five-star hotel every time, unless one's not available. Maybe you go to one of those motels that doesn't offer all the amenities like room service. And I'm always appreciative that when you get into one of those, there's always a pamphlet for a local pizza place where you can have a pie brought to your room. And I imagine you're probably pretty picky, being a New York guy. Pizza is a big deal in New York. Yes, it's the best pizza in the world. It's the water, yes, Josh. It's the water that makes it great. So I was amazed when I found out a man is facing felony charges for pizza impersonation.
So throughout the years, I've covered a lot of impersonators, fake doctors, fake lawyers, fake police officers. But this is a first for me. How about a fake pizza guy? And this was a big deal because, according to police, this has been going on for quite some time.
Drama.
I've heard of a fake police officer before. I have never heard of a fake pizza guy.
Well, I guess this is the first time.
Jose Marti Alvarez tossed behind bars, accused of swindling tourists who thought they were ordering pies from Roman's Pizzeria. I want to show people at home, you've been here 40 years doing this. You take great pride in your pizza.
Yes, we've been, well, actually 40 years and a half.
And this guy's going around and police saying he's making pizzas that...
Bad, uncooked. Sometimes they said in a box a piece of raw dough.
So you order a pizza and he drops off a box with raw dough. Here's the thing that troubles me.
Go ahead.
That if you're gonna do it all the way and don't deliver the pizza. He's really half-assing it if he's just delivering a box with raw dough.
How is this working, though?
It's got to be a misprint of the phone number. I think of Kramer when he was the movie phone guy.
Oh, thank you for calling. They printed the wrong phone
number.
No, he is distributing the pamphlets that have his number, and he's having the business, and he's I'm thinking he has to figure out a way to get pizza boxes. He has to make dough. This is not a good crime spree.
This doesn't...
No.
So he's not an impersonator. He's just another pizza shop.
Well, no, because he doesn't have a pizza shop.
He's just making his stuff in a kitchen.
Yeah, exactly. So watch out if you're in Miami Springs. Now, meanwhile, in a town called Hollister, I love this. They call it a restaurant mishap. I'll let the tape speak for itself.
This is the cup. A cup a server gave a toddler at Fujiyama. It's a Japanese restaurant in Salinas. We talked to the manager, who said the whole thing was a mistake.
Yes.
The wine, they say, came from a container for cooking wine. Problem was, it was labeled as apple juice.
She was swaying, she was falling over, she was leaning on the walls, she couldn't hold her head up.
Right.
She was slurring her words.
They knew something was very wrong.
Duh.
So they tasted it and knew that wasn't apple juice. They rushed her to the ER and found out their two-year-old was drunk. In fact, they say she had a blood alcohol of 0.12, well above the legal limit to drive. They're
now
hoping the restaurant learns from the mistake.
Take proper precautions and how you...
A toddler shouldn't be driving anyway. So, that's not a big deal. But it was in the cooking wine. It was labeled apple juice. And also, just a quick note to the news service there. If you're going to use stock footage of a hospital, make sure it's not from Christmas, because they had pine trees and roping and decorations in there. It's just not the best look. But I know, Adam, you are barren. You have no children, right?
No, this shouldn't continue. I
disagree.
I'm not going to inflict this on a child. Here's what I don't know. It's not apple juice. It's pink. You didn't see? It was pink.
I don't know who's to blame here. The restaurant, I don't think they should return, but also the parents, maybe let's pay attention. And fact that it didn't come in a sippy cup, that's probably
and
a
that,
too.
That dad, he didn't speak up because he enjoyed the whole thing.
Sure. Yeah. Dad wishes he had a cup of
cooking. As his wife was telling the story.
Dad wanted cooking wine too. Dad loves cooking wine. So we share our love of the Beatles, which is so cool. I appreciate that. And let's say you're in, what's the name of the, give me a second to find the name of the town. It was in Long Island. And I have to find the name. Give me a second, because I think you'll know what it is. Amagansett in New York?
Amagansett,
Out on East. The island, right?
Yeah,
east. Okay. So that's where Paul McCartney vacations. And a couple of years ago, we had a story about him listening to a radio station, a local little radio station on Long Island, playing a Beatles record. And he called in, and essentially they let him host the afternoon via phone. I mean, that's... If I was at the board op level still and doing that, I would feel the gurgle. As I said yesterday with Mike,
yes.
But this is perhaps even better. Let's say you're on Long Island and you go to a bar, just a pub, nothing fancy. They've got a 3-piece band playing, and they notice that Paul is in the audience and they invite him up. Of course, he's going to say no. Well, maybe not. The amazing thing is, it's not even a stage. It's just him with a band on a floor at a bar.
That's great. That's
Isn't that
great.
Amazing? I loved it. And
the joy that guy can bring just by being there, man.
I know. Wow. It was so, so cool. So, folks, if you see Paul McCartney, ask him to sing with you. That's what you got to do. That's all I got for you. Adam, what can I say but eternal thanks? Thank you so much for hanging with us today.
Always good to see you guys. Thank you so much for having me. Please wish Mike well with his ass. And I hope I get to see you guys soon, okay?
Absolutely. Anytime. Open door for you. And that's the honest truth. The Adam Ferreira Podcast at all podcast providers, at Adam Ferreira on all the socials, www.adamferreira.com, and also Pottstown, Pennsylvania, Harris, Michigan, Naples, Florida, and somewhere in the wilds of Arkansas. You
I'll
will find
it on the website.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Yeah, come see us again. Thank you, Josh, for all your help today. Mike will be back for the bonus show, and we will see you later. Goodbye, folks.
I'm over here now.
Want more? Make sure you check out the Mike O'Mara Bonus Show. Get it at MikeOMaraShow.com.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.